Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is At The Movies with me, Umar Pagan, Ampike Pagan. The Magnificent Seven, Antoine Fuqua's remake of John Sturges' 1960 remake of Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai is now in cinemas. It's got a stellar cast led by Denzel Washington and Chris Pratt. Rounding up the seven are Ethan Hawke, Vincent D'Onofrio, Manuel Garcia Rolfo, and Martin Sensmeyer. Suitably hammy Peter Sarsgaard chews the scenery as the villainous Bartholomew Bogue.
And don't forget Byung-Hun Lee as Billy Rocks.
Of course, sorry, I've completely forgot Byung-Hun Lee as Billy Rocks. Joining me today to tell you whether this version is any good was, you know, you just heard him, Ian McNally.
Hello Ian. Again.
Can we begin by talking about the fact that the makers of this film were completely allergic to that wonderful theme song?
I think we should begin with, does this film answer the question, why would you do this? First.
So I was... It was one of those things. I love The Magnificent Seven. I grew up watching that film, like literally grew up watching it. It would be on RTM or TV3 in Malaysia all the time, and we'd just be watching it.
It's one of those cultural touchstones like The Great Escape or It's a Wonderful Life that just throw on at holiday times.
Correct. And, you know, you had Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen in the leads of the original by John Sturges. Fantastic film. And, you know, I think John Carpenter called it the beginning of the death of the Western, right? When it came out in 1960. And, you know, because it was. It was the last great Western before Vietnam kind of took over film and television. Because that's what everyone was thinking about at the time.
Yeah.
Now, in 2016, when I'm watching The Magnificent Seven, it's very easy to please me. All you have to do is play that theme song.
Yes.
In any situation, if you play that theme song, I am a happy, happy camper. And they waited right up till the credits.
They waited too long. Like, you don't even get them riding off into the sunset
with the song.
It actually seems like it's added in, like, as an afterthought, which is, it's disrespectful, is the word for it, I think.
Did they not have the rights?
I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe, because that is a full soundtrack, maybe they cheaped out and just bought the rights to play it once. I don't know. Maybe they haven't gone for the full play on Spotify and they don't have it on their full playlist.
Yeah, you can't. You just can't do it. You can't do it. You can't try to be different with something like that. You can try to be different by casting an African-American lead role. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You can even update the storyline and make a modern version of The Magnificent Seven if you wanted to. But there's one thing you cannot escape. It's that iconic theme song.
No.
And they tried to.
Yes.
And I don't know why.
Yeah. You should. I mean, if they're making that movie, you should embrace that theme and embrace the themes of the movie as well.
So that being said, though, I have to say, I did enjoy the movie a little bit.
I did too. I have issues with it, but at the time watching it, you're totally swept up in it. And mostly that is due to two words, Chris Pratt.
Yes, indeed.
If there's anything that cements him as a movie star, it's like, you know, you could say one or two hits have been, you know, Look at the Draw. But at this time round, every time he's on screen, he's magnetic. Like, he doesn't have, no line out of his mouth is bad. No joke lands flat. You know, he charmed the pants off me and all the other male members of the audience, never mind the female members of the audience.
Yeah, he did do that. That being said, Denzel wasn't half bad either.
No.
Denzel Washington and Antoine Fuqua make a good team.
Very good team.
Antoine Fuqua's had a mixed bag of film, but we got to remember that this was the guy that finally got Denzel Washington his Oscar for Training Day.
Yeah.
It wasn't Spike Lee. It wasn't Ridley Scott. It was the guy who was responsible for Olympus Has Fallen.
And The Replacement Killers.
That is correct. but that being said, Replacement Killers, Southpaw, Brooklyn's Finest, all of Antoine Fuqua's movies have this kind of rawness to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very street. And I think he's brought that sensibility to the Wild West.
A little bit. I felt that, you know, casting Denzel's great. But that if you're going to do a Western, you kind of have to lean into what that means then. And they do start off with that very quickly. There is a very, you know, racist town that doesn't take very kindly to Denzel. But after a while, that's completely lost. And if you wanted to push something, not push something, but actually make a message about it, you know, there could be a romance in that role that was not there. You know what I mean? Like, they could have played that, like, he is the hero, even though the time doesn't suit him.
Yeah.
I also thought as well, like, they seemed like they were trying to put some themes on it for modern. Like, there's a hint of ecological worries about the villain. And, you know, the changing of the frightened villagers are no longer Mexican farmers. They're all white folk, which is kind of a weird touch. And Peter Sarsgaard is cartoonishly evil in his first appearance, which...
Oh, very much so.
That completely detracted from the street level element of it from the start. I was like, really knocked me back out of the movie for a good 10, 15 minutes.
But that's another thing that's very staple in a lot of Antoine Fuqua movies. He loves his villains to be truly villainous.
Yeah. All Peter Sarsgaard was missing was a white cap.
Exactly, exactly. He was practically just... He was just chewing the scenery every scene. I quite liked that. I didn't mind that too much because it made me angry enough at him as a villain so that when these seven people come together to fight him, it feels like they have true common purpose.
Yeah.
There's someone bad enough that you want to see him suffer. I mean, every time you watch a movie like this, a revenge fantasy like this, where most revenge fantasies fall short, is when the villain has some semblance of a conscience.
Mm.
And it doesn't seem like Bartholomew Bogue has any sense of a conscience.
I know, but I think that it just felt like the rest of it seems so realistic. There's even a scene where, you know, everybody's sweetheart, Chris Pratt, does some stuff that's pretty nasty. And that kept it grounded nicely. He's not just this lovable guy with guns. He actually is a violent man. And I thought that that has that, what you said earlier, that grounding level, whereas... Him kind of took me out of it. It's like I could be watching a cartoon villain. You know, why is he bad? Why do we hate this guy? Because he's a bad man. And I think the best villains, we've talked before on other shows, the best villains are the ones who think they're the hero.
Yeah,
and
that's
who
right.
don't spit all over the furniture when making speeches at Denzel.
No, you're right. Yeah. This guy practically walks around telling people, you know what? I am the villain.
Yeah,
he might as well have a sign. I am the bad guy. Exactly. So the one thing I did like about the film, which it held true to both Seven Samurai and the original 1960 Magnificent Seven, was the fact that this was essentially the story of seven people who care about nothing and nobody except themselves. But they find this common cause in this village and these villagers to come together, and it gives them purpose and meaning in their life.
Yeah.
That, for me, was always... the real selling point of this story. And that message is conveyed really, really well. I think none more so than the character of Ethan Hawke, who's a broken down mercenary / war hero.
And he is very similar to another character from the original. But I think that feeling came across way more... The new movie's a little more busy, I think, in that respect. It came across way more subtly and clearly in the original. There's a very simple discussion between Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen, where he says, where are you from? Dodge City. Where are you from? Tombstone. Any action up there? No. Any action up there? No. And it's like, these are hired guns or men of action, and civilization has come to the West, and they're losing it, and their way of life is going away, like the samurai in the original. But that is conveyed in just those little lines. It's not like, I have nothing to live for, so I am going to save this village. And, you know, just there's so much subtlety in the original that I felt this came off a lot more busy. And the more I thought about it afterwards, and I watched the original, watched the first half of the original before seeing this and then saw the second half, and it's so restrained, and there's so much character in just Yul Brynner undoing the tie on his gun. That tells you everything you need to know about him. Whereas, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio's character, we haven't talked about, he just pops in and it's like, here we go, or the magic Indian.
Oh,
an Indian turns up magically and joins the team, and it's like, okay.
Real magic Indian.
That's just like clunkily handled, you know?
And only the diversity characters survive at the end. I don't know if that's a spoiler. I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler, because if you've seen The Magnificent Seven or Seven Samurai, you know the point of the film is that everyone dies.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? And this one, they made a real point. They made a real point to kill off all the white people.
And, you know, in this version of the movie as well, bullets are one-shot kills, except when they hit one guy.
That's right.
That was, again, it was just these little small things that kept taking you out of it. Because moment to moment, I really enjoyed the humor of it, the interplay between Denzel and Chris Pratt, Vincent D'Onofrio's weird voice thing he's doing the whole way through. And, you know, like you said, Ethan Hawke as well really plays that broken character really well. And his interplay with Byung-Hun Lee is really good as well. But just then, the more I thought about it afterwards and the more I compared it to the original, it became less of a shadow of it.
Well, so here's the thing. I enjoyed the film as a hero piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy movies like that. It's why I enjoy watching any one of the recent Liam Neeson films or any one of the recent Denzel movies, because he seems to be following in that Liam Neeson footsteps.
He's always out for revenge.
Exactly. And that Equalizer film was a great example of where Antoine Fuqua and Denzel Washington seem to be going, because Magnificent Seven is very similar in how they play his character out. He's virtually untouchable in this film as well.
Yeah.
And I enjoy watching hero pieces like that, because for some reason, it fills you with a sense of joy. It's some real escapist cinema, right?
Yeah.
But that brings me back to the point of why remake Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
The original Magnificent Seven and even the original Seven Samurai kind of wrote, in many ways, a lot of the language of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Like Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, if you watch it now, it is because of that film that everyone fights in the rain at the end.
Yes.
Right?
The way to Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, everyone fights in the rain at the end because of that movie.
Yeah.
And so when you remake a film like this and you spend a fortune making a film like this, I can't help but wonder, wait, you've not done anything in any way. You've not told a new story.
Yeah. Should say it is a new story. So they're not just like the characters are not the same from the original.
No, they're not. The names are different.
The names are different and
but
the mix
so
up a bit.
They're so similar. Yeah. You know, some of their personalities have been swapped around, but that's about it, really.
There's a piece that is very just basically the introduction of James Coburn in the original, and it's there moment for moment, beat for beat.
Exactly. And that makes me wonder, like, why do this? So why spend $100 million or whatever this movie cost making another version? Because it's not even a vehicle for any one of these stars. Everyone in this movie is already a bona fide movie star.
Yeah.
They don't need this.
Apart from Martin Senmeyer.
Well, the Magic Indian.
The Magic Indian.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Do you have an answer to that? Because for me, it just feels like such a filler piece.
Yeah. I mean, I think I said directly after watching it, it felt like a beginning and a middle in search of an end. There's a very clear ending to this movie that, it seems...
You said that as soon as the last line of the movie ran, you went, this is a movie in search for an ending.
The last line and the scene that accompanies it, it's like it was inserted by somebody else. That last line is ridiculous. That, I think, probably hurt me more. But there's a very clear ending that should be to this movie. It is a revenge flick and there's supposed to be something that happens. But if you do that ending, it changes the tone of the movie completely and it becomes more of an 18s, you know, Charles Bronson Death Wish style movie rather than a fun Western movie. And it seemed to fall between those stools. There's a very clear way for the main hero with ties to the villain to end this. But if he ends it that way, then he's the bad guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can't see that. Yeah.
I felt that was off-putting. I mean, we should talk a little bit, I think, as well about Hayley Bennett's character. I think she was a good metaphor for the movie because she is the woman who gets the guys involved.
The protagonist, right? She's the one that they have to save.
Yes. And while they have, you know, formed a really nice Western milieu, you know, everyone's wearing era-appropriate garb, she's wearing this really distracting low-cut top throughout it. And I felt that was like a metaphor for the movie. It's distracting, it's historically inaccurate, and it's stretched a bit too thin.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. However, that being said, can I just add that until I watched this movie, I didn't realize how much I wanted Denzel Washington in a cowboy role.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I got to see it. As the man in black, as Yul Brynner, as the black man in black, I think he pulled it off really, really well.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing which I would like to see a sequel to, if for nothing else. Not because it's The Magnificent Seven, but just because I want to see him as a cowboy in the Old West doing this stuff. I miss old Westerns. Mm. 3:10 to Yuma, I really, really enjoyed.
Yep.
I enjoyed True Grit a lot, especially the Coen Brothers remake. I
understood the bits of it I could understand when
when they
Jeff Bridges
mumbling.
Wasn't mumbling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I enjoyed that too. And I find myself, and you know, a Western in the modern era is incredibly out of place in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit with any kind of sensibility. And that's why all of the new science fiction movies are essentially Westerns.
Yeah.
And they've taken the genre and they've kind of folded it into all these other genres.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a genre like zombies or something like that. The Western has to mean something. The West has to be something.
Whether the frontier.
It's the frontier of civilization rolling in, or men who don't fit in with the normal world, or, you know, civilized men having to resort to uncivilized means. There's always the themes around it. And I thought this one just wasn't, it didn't have that mythic quality.
But I think it's difficult in 2016. I think it's really difficult because there's nothing in the American sensibility that connects to this idea of the new frontier. It'll always feel like a relic from the past.
Yes.
Even watching TV shows like Deadwood, for example, I mean, you know, it was released in the 2000s, set in the West,
yeah.
but it still feels like a relic from the past. It still feels like filmmakers and TV showrunners are trying to tell an old story.
Yes.
And that's where I think this movie fell short for me, because it still felt like it was trying to tell an old story.
Yeah, it needs to do something new with the whole idea.
Yeah.
And it failed to do that.
Yeah. That being said, it's a bit of a romp.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun summer movie. But unfortunately, I think we saw it early, so we saw it a week in advance. And I have trouble remembering some of the best scenes at this point.
Yeah, no. I think, and that speaks to the quality of the film, if you ask me. I think it's a movie that you'll watch and you will enjoy while you are watching it, but it's almost immediately forgettable.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We'll still urge you to go watch it, because that's what we do on this show.
Yeah.
Because we want you to watch it and we want you to talk to us about it. That's what we like. So you can tweet me. I'm on @UmarPagan.
I'm on @McNastyPrime.
Ian and I will be back after this to talk about this week's other big release, Shin Godzilla or Godzilla Resurgence, just a little bit. Don't go anywhere. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, Veggie Delight or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.